You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Samuel and I have lost our daughter.
No!
We prayed to see our girl again. The contact started small. But then she wanted permission to move into the doll. We soon realized it wasn't our daughter.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kel Smith. Joining me today from Real Film Chatter is Patrick Campbell.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you back. So today,
quick, I am not in my car today during the podcast. I just want to make that perfectly clear. I am not in my car like the last few times. I thought that I had to come out the gate and say that. Instead, I'm in my living room, in my boxers, hanging out with my corgi. That's so much better, right?
It is. At least you don't have to stress about traffic.
Exactly. you weren't expecting that. I'm sorry, man.
No, I'm good. And I'm just in my room surrounded by posters and whatnot. So anyway, we are here today to talk about Annabelle Creation. And Patrick, I'll let you go first. What did you think of Annabelle Creation, especially since you saw the first, or I guess the movie that came before that?
I love this fucking movie. It's so good. It's a funhouse film. Like, this is what I imagine a really good, creepy, haunted house horror movie should be like. It's exactly what I like about the Conjuring movies. James Wan is so good, and so the fact that he got David F. Sandberg, who gets what Juan wants to do and is equally as talented, is so exciting. And this movie is great because of it. There's just this real theme park element to the movie where it's the slow climb, and then you get to the top, it drops you, it turns you, it just goes for being this big, fun horror film that you may have seen it before, but it doesn't matter because Sandberg is so creative and so cool as a filmmaker that it overcomes certain story beats that you've seen before to be a movie that is just a lot of fun. And in a summer that was basically just a giant dumpster fire of bullshit for most of the year, it was fun to just have a good horror movie. We haven't really had a good horror movie this year. So, I mean, it was nice to come back to the Conjuring universe for the second spinoff in this series, and it ended up being a good spinoff versus what we got in the original, which is very clunky and maybe not as good of a film. And I think that this movie opened up the world a lot more in ways that I was excited about versus the way that the first film was. And I think that this bodes well for the franchise moving forward, and it's actually made me more excited for the upcoming spinoffs.
I'm gonna explain this to the viewers of like why the situation we're in or with anyone in as they are going into this movie. So this is a prequel to the prequel
to the
doll that was in that's about a doll that was in the first 5 minutes of The Conjuring and is never seen or heard of again. And first of all, the other prequel did not work at all, or from what I've heard, I haven't seen it. It didn't work with people at all. And so we're now getting a prequel to the prequel, and somehow it works. Like, that's the thing that's so, like, weird. Normally we're in a state of mind where prequels don't normally work. you know, I mean, the Star Wars prequels are infamously hated by fans. I mean, just volatilely hated. So in a world where prequels don't work, somehow Annabelle Creation somehow works. As like you said, it's a fun haunted house movie, or I guess you said fun house, but I call it a haunted house movie, and there's legitimate scares. And you're right, James Wan gets what, or I mean, David Sandberg gets what James Wan wants in these movies, in that he wants to kind of have a combination of the fun haunted house feel, but also bring in surreal horror, and also have interesting characters in horror movies, and rather than be just bland people in a movie. So I commend David F. Sandberg for crafting a really good movie, because if I read the script, I would probably have said,
well, and here's the thing, like, Sandberg walked into a near impossible situation, which was essentially, I have to make a prequel to a film that people didn't enjoy, but I want to tell the origin of this doll in a way that it doesn't destroy the mystery of the doll and makes you fear the doll more, or the entity within the doll. And I think that is what makes this movie so successful. And I think that in doing that, it's actually made me appreciate the last film a little bit more, especially with the way everything ties up. And if anyone saw Lights Out last year, we know that David F. Sandberg is a great horror director, because Lights Out was a 80-minute just like grabbing you by the throat horror thriller that just was so well made, and especially at the level of a PG-13 film. The fact that he got to take this to the next level with like this kind of creepy R-rated film and really dive into this Conjuring universe a little bit more bodes very well for what we're seeing, because it's a just very well-made movie. It's expertly crafted. I mean, every beat in this movie, in very much a James Wan sort of way, every beat is meticulously set up. Every scare, every bit of humor, every character moment is meticulously built to pay off. And I think that's really interesting, especially for a movie that I'm calling a funhouse film. You know, like this just scary movie that's just like a funhouse horror film. And for some reason, like, we don't get that very often. And this movie, just everywhere, it just works the whole time. You're just like, oh my God, every beat of this movie is a lot of fun. In a very creepy, very tense, very atmospheric, and it works, and that's impressive.
Yeah, and you know, and you mentioned, you know, he had to kind of make a prequel to a prequel that no one liked. He's having to also work off the script from the same screenwriter as Annabelle, so as the first Annabelle movie. So he's having to work off of, and I don't want to, you know, Gary Duberman, because I haven't seen Annabelle to make a good case. Well, but the thing is, even watching this movie, I was like, this script really is kind of just like something Stephen King would kind of crap out in an afternoon for like, I don't know, a few bucks.
What we have to remember about Gary Duberman is he also wrote the upcoming It remake. He's one of the writers on that film. He's also writing The Nun, which is the next spinoff. I don't know if it was necessarily the script that was so much the problem with the first Annabelle, so much as it was the director, John R. Leonetti. Because as we all know, Leonetti is also the guy who's known for being the director of Mortal Kombat. Annihilation. Not the first one, the second one. He did The Butterfly Effect too. He's done, like, not very good movies. He just did that really terrible horror film earlier this year, Wish Upon, just a few weeks ago. He's not a sound filmmaker. He never has been. He's a great cinematographer because he was the cinematographer on Insidious and The Conjuring. He's worked with James Wan a lot. But he's not a crafted filmmaker. not like we're already seeing in David F. Sandberg, who is a crafted filmmaker and really knows what he's doing. And that plays, that's a very big difference, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing about David F. Sandberg is he really gets creative with, I don't want to say kills, but like the scares. He gets really like creative in, especially, I mean, we do have the moment where it's introduced her own little light, or the girl with this, like, polo,
polio, yeah.
Polio, like, sorry. And like she has to go up she has to ride a chair like and ride a lift upstairs. So later on we find out it comes back later. She has to go use it to get downstairs, but when it fails her, the whole thing, you know, it's her own doing. It's own doing that it fails her. She thinks it's supposed to protect her. And even like that character, the girl with the crutches, I mean, you just look at her and go, oh my gosh, poor girl, she's not going to be able to make it. If anything happens to her, she's the first one to go. You know, she's the first one and the only person, and the only one of the girls that's in this house that goes.
And here's the thing, like, this actress, Talitha Bateman, she's so good. Number one, there's going to come a time where she's going to play either Jennifer Lawrence's little sister or daughter, because they look very similar. They act very similar. It's actually kind of uncanny. And a lot of the time I was like, I feel like I'm watching Jennifer Lawrence if she was a child, which was very strange, but it's good. She's very, very good in this movie. And from the moment you meet her, like, she's this very optimistic, wonderful girl, and you don't realize anything's wrong with her until that, again, Sandberg setting you up one way with the character and then turning it on its head as she steps off the bus and she's got the crutches and, like, she's got the braces on her legs, and you're like, oh my God, she's got polio. And that plays a very big part in that character, which I thought was a really nice twist.
Yeah, and on top of that, she has her own, I guess, she has her own, like, not sister, but her best friend that is kind of her sister, her pseudo sister, in Lula Wilson, who was an Origin of Ouija, Origin of Evil, last October, as the possessed girl. And here, she's like, she's, you know, the one that's, you know, knows everything, and she's like, she goes into the room where Annabelle is with her character Janice, and she's like, "Yeah, I don't want to be in this room. It's like full of evil." So it's just really, you know, and her character has her own little arc. She has to kind of get over, you know, not being so present, not being so, you know, I don't want to say contrived, but, you know, enabling to her, you know, to her friend Janice. Like, she has to learn to be able to take care of her own self, and that's her arc of the movie. And she does Lula Wilson, like, she does a really good job of conveying that. And you also have, you know, the nun, the sister, Sister Charlotte.
Well, like, you have her and Stephanie Sigmund. She's quite good in this. She plays off all the girls very well, which is very important, because you need to believe that these girls trust her and, you know, that they all have simultaneously lived together for so long. Because the thing is all these little girls are being moved out to this house because the orphanage they are living in, they're all orphans. And the orphanage they're living in, I'm guessing, got too crowded. And there are all the older girls, and they're being moved out. So they're going to this home that's owned by this family called the Mullins, and Anthony LaPaglia, I can never say his name right, and I love him. And
it's so frustrating.
LaPaglia. Thank you. He is amazing. I love him so much in Empire Records, and, you know, he's done a lot of television and stuff. But he's a great actor. I always like when he shows up in things. And his wife, Miranda Otto, is played by Miranda Otto, but Anthony plays a guy who's the doll maker, and he's the creator of course, Annabelle. the doll.
But and, unintentionally, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, he creates the doll, not the possession, the doll. And the thing is they lose their daughter at the beginning of this movie in a car accident. And that it's such a surreal moment. And then it does this cycle where it jumps ahead 12 years. And now they've very much lived in isolation. And these girls move into the house. And you can tell something's wrong and things have changed, but you don't really understand the extent of it until all hell starts to break loose when Janice finds the doll. And it, you know, the thing that I like about that is every character beat in this movie feels necessary. And I thought, like, in any other movie where the parents are like, we lost our kid and we didn't know how to deal with it, and it's been very hard on us, you'd feel kind of like, well, why did you do the thing that you did to try to recreate them? Remember that movie Godsend that came out a bunch of years ago? It had like Robert De Niro and I think is it Haley Joel Osment as the clone kid, and not a good movie.
And, yes. You know, I remember.
But you know what I'm talking about? So you see movies like this where mm-hmm. the parents make questionable decisions because they miss their kid. But in this one, the idea of the Mullins actually caring enough about losing their daughter, B, and it plays this interesting part where you're like, oh, I kind of understand where you were coming from. You were trying to see her again, but it was more like you wanted to feel her presence. You didn't know what you were doing, but you feel for them. And so that's what makes the whole thing with this doll or with this creature that inhabits the doll so much more terrifying, because it pretends for so long to be B, only for it to not be. And you feel for them because it hurts them in the end. And it ends up scarring Esther, and Esther has to live, you know, she's basically been crippled. She's got this, just her face has been scarred, and she doesn't really leave the house. And they live in fear of this thing still being there, but trapped. And so for the first time I was watching a movie where I was like, they're not stupid people. And they weren't making like a rash decision where they were, you know, going to psychics or anything, trying to get her back. They were just praying to see her again, and something decided to answer. And I kind of liked that because it seemed more realistic and it worked for me.
Well, and it also sticks to the Gondry mythology with the Warrens, in that the Warrens have always said there will always be, you know, if you're calling to someone, that's one of the ways a demon will come out, is mm-hmm. because they're going to more likely prey upon what you want and what you're desiring in order to, you know, reach, you know, the kind of come back into our world. And that's what, and so it works in kind of the mythology of this universe.
Yes.
So, and it's just, And you're right. It's not like, you know, they're dumb. You know, the monster, or as it's referred on the IMDb credits, the Annabelle demon just preys upon them.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's just what works.
Preys upon
mm-hmm. right. Because, like you said, it very much plays into the built-in mythology of what the Conjuring series has really become. And it really pulls from what you know about the things that the Warrens teach these people who they deal with all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very interesting, because as you see at one point in the movie, the door actually opens a little bit more of the next film in the mythology, which is The Nun. And none of us were expecting that. And it's a nice little tease, which I'm very curious to see if Sister Charlotte ends up being in The Nun. And even in a cameo like capacity. Because there's a picture in the movie where you see Mr. Mullins kind of looking at it. And she's like, you know, I went to this place and I got to know these nuns. They're like my family now. And, you know, he's looking and he goes, you said there was how many of you? Four of us? Well, who's this last person? And it's the nun. And so I thought that was a cool little nod that really opens the door to the next film, you know? And I liked that because it was world building in a sense that it didn't feel out of place. It works because Sister Charlotte is a nun herself. And so to be in that world makes sense to me. And I liked that because it just felt so cool. And like, and that just makes sense.
Yeah, and they're just building, you know, happily their own mythology, their own little quote-unquote shared universe. And I do mean that quote-unquote, because it is sort of, the term is kind of loose in this sense. But yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. It's a lot more entertaining than I thought it was, because really the only trailer that I actually was like into was the first teaser that came out a year ago, with you just are focused on Miranda Otto's face, or I guess in this movie, Esther's face. And she's just looking at the horror that's, you know, being turned into her daughter. So mm-hmm. That was the only teaser. So I was really impressed. And going back to the scene that's in the teaser, it's in this movie and it's really well done. Like the reveal of the demon in this movie to, you know, to Esther, like, again, it's, you know, a mixture of practical effects and little bits of CGI sprinkled in to kind of hide some of the, you know, practical effects. And it's just, again, how they, you know, do the monster just like, and, or just not falling down, but just like gliding into frame, and how they just do little subtle, you know, it's just that kind of well-crafted filmmaking that I love in James Wan movies that David F. Sandberg is kind of just key. Because it's just such, you know, because it's just like, it adds to the surrealness of these movies. And no, just absolutely. Makes it just a little bit more. So yeah,
I completely agree with you, man. And that's why I like it so much. Mm-hmm. Because Sandberg really gets what Wan is going for, and it feels like a part of this series. The first Annabelle looked like part of the series, but it didn't quite feel like it. This one does. It clearly has a place, and it works.
Right. So you saw the first movie, and spoilers, everyone, the first one ends kind of in a Rogue One way, where it ends right as the first movie is starting.
Yeah, I liked this a lot, actually. And like I said, it made me appreciate the first movie a little bit more, because I felt like it was very interesting that it did the 12-year ring effect that we saw at the beginning mm-hmm. of the movie. Because the movie starts, jumps ahead 12 years, and then ends and jumps ahead 12 years again. And it leads you right into the beginning of the first film. And right. That twist and reveal is so perfectly handled that you go, oh my God, Sandberg's a damn genius, because it makes you actually understand what happens there. And it feels a lot less out of place now. And I think that it actually kind of lends an interesting angle to the first film now, because you see how everything kind of got there. And I don't want to give too much away for those who haven't seen it, but I think it works really, really well. And the twist with the character at the beginning of the first film and who it turns out to be is very interesting as well.
Yeah, it's really, it really does work itself into the first Annabelle, which... So I was actually, I still haven't seen the first movie, but I know how the first one opens, in that I know that originally, like, it was really what, you know, kind of carried the soul of the Janice forward, was it, she bled on the doll itself. And that's what kind of started the whole thing originally in the first movie. So I'm going to have to ask, They had the doll, right? The main characters in the first movie. They just had it randomly, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it's just how the doll got there and how she is also like, it was just all circumstance, I guess.
Yeah, and I almost feel like the whole point is that it was the it was clear that the Bean was always going to go back to the doll, you know, because that's what it was tied to.
Okay.
And so I think that you had to go back to it, and it kind of comes full circle. Because remember, I mean, in the movie, towards the end, they hand her a doll. You must like dolls, and you see it respond. And the fun, like, the fun fact is that most people don't realize it, that the real Annabelle doll is actually a Raggedy Ann doll. And that's why it was...
Yeah, I even caught that.
Yeah, and so the nod at the end of the movie where they gave her the Raggedy Ann doll was kind of fun. The only reason it's not a Raggedy Ann in the movies is because the company was not going to let them make a movie where a Raggedy Ann doll was a serial murderer for obvious reasons. And
yeah, I mean, and James, well, and also James Wan has this like particular style of what he wants out of creepy puppets or creepy dolls. Like, he has his own style with the eyes and the mouth. Like, he has his own little style that he puts. So it wasn't going to be a Raggedy Ann doll.
No, but
regardless of,
you know, and that's okay.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Here's the thing. At the end of the day, I want it to be a heightened sense of the reality that they're playing off of. Mm-hmm. And so not making it a Raggedy Ann makes it feel like an Elseworlds version almost. And I'm okay with that. I really am.
Right.
So it works.
With that, So for me, as someone who is watching the ending, I knew how it opened, and I was still like, oh, this is actually kind of clever. I wonder, you know, I wonder if they was watching Rogue One at the time and thought that would be cooler if they added some more to this, to the ending later on, or if that was originally an idea. Because I just thought that was like, man, this is really like, we're just going right up to the end here. Because I recognize Annabelle Wallace in this movie, the sequel, from, you know, King Arthur, and I knew she was in Annabelle, so I was like, oh wow, we're really going like literally as it's happening. And yeah. So I thought it was cool, and for you, it was probably a surreal, you said it was like more like a surreal experience, or did
I think I just, like I said, I mean, for me, the thing that makes this work is that it almost feels like this Elseworlds version of our real world. And I like that this ties into the thing about it's, they've clearly been like basing it on the true stories, but there's things like in The Conjuring 2 that they really pulled it in different directions than reality. And I think that's obviously a, because it's a movie, you have to do that because you need the dramatic effect. But I think it works a little bit better. And so the more that they're doing that, the more that they're creating these inspired by true stories, but what's real, what's not. And I think it opens a lot of doors and a lot of questions to people actually like looking into these real stories. And I think that's really cool.
I do too. So I got a two-part question before we head out, and that is, David F. Sandberg is, are we feeling okay with him doing Shazam? I've not read the comics, and I've heard that it's going to be a lighter tone, so I'm assuming we're going to get more of a comedy. So do you think David F. Sandberg will be a good fit for Shazam?
I love it, dude. I think that if we've learned anything, that Juan has a skill at finding great filmmakers, and I think that he's clearly a great filmmaker, and that I think that this is his chance to do something really cool, because there's a lot of lighter moments in both Lights Out and the and Annabelle Creation. There's a lot of little bits of humor. There's a lot of character moments. These are the kind of things that every movie needs. And I think that because he handles them so well, it's going to make his jump to doing a superhero film very, very interesting and very, very cool. And I think that makes me excited. I also think that when you look at just the way that he worked with young actors on both films, that he's going to be able to tell that story very well, because the whole idea of Shazam is it's a kid. You know, the superhero's a kid. And so there's a good portion of that movie where it's going to be a kid, and then you need to be able to create the idea that this kid is actually a superhero at the same time. And so I think he's pretty much the perfect choice for it. It just makes sense to me.
I do too. Kids a lot in these last two movies, Lights Out and Annabelle Creation. And I think he'll do it. He'll bring something interesting that I want out of the DCEU. And I'm even hearing that James Wan is.
I wouldn't be surprised if Wan ends up producing Shazam and continues to work with Sandberg moving. I have a feeling he played a big part in Sandberg landing.
I think so. Shazam film. I would think so too.
I mean, Wan is WB's golden child. Between him and now, you see with what Sandberg did with Annabelle, he's printing WB money. I mean, Annabelle was expected to open at like $25 million this weekend and is now looking at a $38 million opening weekend. The only reason it's getting that is because the word of mouth of what Sandberg did is so good that people are turning out even in spite of how much people didn't like the last movie.
Yeah, that's the surprising thing, is people are turning out to this movie. And I mean, I would also like say, yeah, James Wan probably played a part in him getting the role as director for Shazam, but also they probably were seeing cuts of Annabelle Creation early on, and they were like, oh yeah, we have someone we can mine as a filmmaker and like champion and get him on as a filmmaker. And so they probably like approached him, you know, approached Jeff Johns and John Berg, you know, for this. And it probably went all the way up to the DC people and pretty much allowing David S. Sandberg to do whatever he wants. So I'm pretty happy that this is happening for him, because he is a really accomplished filmmaker in this, and he's really doing a really good job. And we don't know when Shazam is going to come out as of this podcast recording. I'm just assuming 2019. But anyway, the other part of the question I had was, where do you want to see this go? The Nun is already in post-production for a July 2018 release date, with Corin Hardy as the director and Gary Dauberman is the screenwriter. And we're also getting The Crooked Man. Where else would you want to see this go? I know they're trying to figure out how to do a Conjuring 3 with James Wan, but of course he's working on Aquaman. So where do you see this going, and where would you want this to go?
First things first is I'd be totally fine with Sandberg doing Conjuring 3 at this point. I've been very much like, I don't want the Conjuring movies unless Wan's directing, but I'd feel comfortable if Wan produced and Sandberg decided to direct it, which would be okay with me, because I just want a good Conjuring film. That said, I like the idea of continuing to explore these other aspects of this universe. The only thing is I feel like you need the next Conjuring movie for us to do that again, because I'm at the point now, like, I've gotten one not-so-good Annabelle movie and a really good Annabelle movie. I don't necessarily want to roll the dice for, like, a third one, because, you know, we're already batting 50%. I think we're good just leaving it as it is. I'll take the one hit, and, you know, we struck out once, we got one home run. I'm good with that. The Nun, I'm excited about. I love that Tessa Farmiga is in it, who, of course, is Vera Farmiga's younger sister. So that, you know, keeping it in the family, as we've seen in this universe, you know, with Wan wanting to work with Sandberg, now you have Farmiga's younger sister in this. You got Damien Bouchier in it, too, which is a hugely cool get. I mean, he's a fantastic actor. I'm excited about that. And I love that The Crooked Man is getting its own movie, because that's what I wanted to see in the beginning. I wasn't interested in The Nun so much as I was interested, of course, in The Crooked Man, because I thought that The Crooked Man lent itself to being something new and different. And the way they're talking about it is more like a dark fairy tale. And I think that's fascinating. And when you see that visual in your head, I'm starting to think, oh, so something more along the lines of maybe Pan's Labyrinth, maybe the Dark Crystal, you know, these kind of creepy family adventure type films with a dark undertone. And that could be kind of cool. I mean, obviously they're not going to be like that exactly, but I don't see, I love the idea of like a dark fantasy film in this universe. And so yeah, that has my curiosity.
I'm very interested, especially if they keep the stop motion like aesthetic for the Crooked Man, because that's how they did it in The Conjuring. So I would be so for it if they do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and as far as I know, I don't think they have anything set for the Crooked Man. I think they just have maybe the writer and that's it. But so with that going, with that said, do we have any more final thoughts on this before we go?
I just have to say, like, if you're sitting there going, you know, I'm not really wanting to see it. I didn't like the first one, but I like the Conjuring films, so I'm really not sure what to do. Go see it. Really, roll the dice and go see it, because I think this is the kind of film that begs to be seen on the big screen. It's a great communal experience with a lot of people. It's just a really great film, and I like it a lot. And I really think that you guys will like it a lot, even if you aren't expecting to. And I think that's what makes the fact that it's so good that much more satisfying. It just works on every level, and it's just a lot of fun. So definitely one of the highlights to closing out this summer. Again, with how hit and miss the summer was, it's nice to go out on a high note, especially after Dark Tower just like broke my heart last week. So I'm glad that Annabelle ended up being so good. I really can't say it enough. Go see this movie. It's totally worth your admission.
Oh boy, The Dark Tower. Yes. I recommend Annabelle Creation. See it. Despite the first one, and yeah, it's a really good time at the movies. And I mean, we still got a couple more weeks of the summer left, but this was a nice little closing weekend as everyone's going back to school, going back to work as usual. Life is continuing on. So yeah, this was a really good way to kind of somewhat end the summer, especially since The Dark Tower did really nothing for anyone. So Patrick, where can the good people find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at @PJ_Campbell or Facebook at @PatrickCampbell_PJ. If you have not already, you can listen to our podcast, Real Film Chatter, REEL Film Chatter. Every Monday we do a new show talking about the things going on in the world of movies. We got some other new stuff going on right now too. Also, you can find my writing over at SoCalThrills.com, where you can actually read my review of Annabelle Creation. And, you know, thank you guys so much for your continued support. You're the best.
Well, thank you, Patrick. And I'll leave a link to your SoCal review in the description of this podcast.
Yeah, thanks, man.
You're welcome. And you can find me on Twitter at @MovieKale. And you can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic. And then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHC Network. Please leave us a comment on iTunes. Please tell us how we're doing. That is it for this week. We are coming back next week with The Hitman Bodyguard and Steven Soderbergh's Logan Lucky. And fun at the movies, everyone. See you all next week.
I'm a AAA rated executive protection agent. And you're the most wanted hitman in the world. My job is to keep you out of harm's way.
And
you won't last 1 hour without me.
Fuck you!
Eat my ass!
That's what she said! Suspects are on.